The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Live from West Babylon, New York, this is Sports Talk 1240.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Sports Talk 1240. We are coming to you live from the WGBB studios on beautiful Long Island. It is Sunday, April 30th, May 1st, tomorrow, everybody. Unbelievable. NFL draft weekend just finished up. We got a lot to talk about tonight. I am your host, Tony Seville. We have a very fun show for you this evening. First, we're going to have Dennis Wozak of the Associated Press. He is the New York Jets beat writer. He's going to go over the entire NFL draft, well, the Jets portion of it at least, with us at 8:10. Pretty successful weekend, I would have to think, for the Jets. Great first pick. Jamal Adams kind of falls in their lap at six, very similar to the way Leo Williams did a couple of years ago at six. So good weekend for the Jets. So we'll talk about that with Dennis at 8:10. Then at 8:35, we're going to talk with Newsday's Randy Marshall. She is the editorial board manager there. She's also the guru of Long Island arenas. She's going to get into a little bit about this New York Islanders bid. It's official now. NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman came on had an interview with the Associated Press the other day, and basically, not even basically, he just came out and said that the Islanders will be in the bidding process for Belmont to build a new arena there. So we're going to talk to Randy, find out exactly what's going on with that. What this means, what's going to happen going forward. But there's lots going on in New York sports, everybody. The Mets, not a lot positive, I'll tell you that. Right now, the Mets are a complete disaster. You look at what happened this week with Noah Syndergaard. Had to skip his start the other day. Said that tired arm, bicep problems, tendonitis, whatever they called it. I don't even know. He skips his start. All of a sudden, he's starting on Sunday. Comes out today that the Mets wanted to send him for an MRI this week, and he refused. And he said, no, I'm good. I'll be fine, and I'm going to start on Sunday. So the Mets, being who they are, the Mets, they decide, okay, that sounds like a good idea. Who knows better than Noah Syndergaard what's going on inside of his body? We don't need to take a look. So they send him out there today. He gets shelled for an inning and a third and has to come out with, it seems to be that he has some type of a lat problem. I don't even know what a lat is, but he's got a lat problem. Came off clutching underneath his arm. So basically not knowing what's going on in the biceps, it doesn't even matter if that's the case. And this could be something that was completely unrelated. But as Sandy Alderson likes to say, the optics behind what has happened with the New York Mets this week is completely ridiculous, and now they look stupid, and now they have to. They're going to have to answer questions. You know, Terry Collins today in his post game press conference was livid, as far as I understand, and as you should be. And you know, and Collins I think is part of the problem here also. But you know, be that as it may, the Mets are not looking good right now. Not positive news also for the Rangers. They started their series with the Ottawa Senators round two after disposing of the Montreal Canadiens in round one. They've lost two heartbreaker overtime games. Yesterday, Gabriel Pujol scored four goals, including the tying goal late, and then the go-ahead goal, and then the overtime winner. So the Rangers are now down 2-0, coming back to Madison Square Garden. Is it going to be a tough go for them? Because Ottawa has been much more difficult of an opponent, I think, than even they could have, I guess the Ottawa is a team that during the regular season they were pretty consistent. Okay, as a team that played well throughout the entire, it kind of held their place throughout the whole season. Guy Boucher is their coach, and very well coached team. Got a lot out of his roster this year. But I'll tell you, man, they've given the Rangers a hard time in this series, and now they're up 2-0, and it's going to be a long haul for them to come back. On a positive note, we have two positive notes for New York sports this week. The Yankees are off to a great start. I mean, who would have thought? I mean, the Yankees come out, they're tied for first. They had a good series this weekend against first, the team that they're tied with, Baltimore Orioles. Young Aaron Judge, the outfielder, what an April this guy has had. Smoking hot, 10 home runs, 20 RBIs, he finishes with the month. This dude can hit the ball, and he just, I saw him hit a home run the other day. I don't think the thing has landed yet. I mean, he has really gotten off to a great start. The Yankees know that they have a tremendous amount of talent, young talent. They have, Judge, Gary Sanchez is not even in the lineup, probably their best young player. He's not going to be back, I don't think, for another week or two. I think he's going to begin his rehab assignment, so that's a big thing for them. But Judge is off to a great start. Great start the other night by Masahiro Tanaka. It was 97 pitches in a complete game. That's like unheard of nowadays. So, great week for the Yankees, and good for them tied for first in the division. I don't think anybody expected them to be this good, especially right off the bat, and with Sanchez out of the lineup. So to see them doing what they're doing, that's a positive for them. And I don't know if anybody saw, with all the things going on this weekend, I don't know if anybody saw the NHL draft lottery last night, but this thing, normally the draft lottery is pretty straightforward in the NHL. It's the team that's supposed to get the first overall pick usually ends up with it. It doesn't differentiate very often, but they're using a different formula now, and last night it went pretty much completely off the board. So basically, if you don't understand the way that the NHL draft lottery works, it's that the 15 teams that don't make the playoffs are all in contention for the first overall pick. It never used to be that way. It used to only be the last five teams could be in contention. But they decided to adopt this new NBA style of lottery, and now any team is in the running as long as you didn't make the playoffs. So teams 1 through 15, obviously the team that finishes 30th has the best chance. The team that finishes 15th has got the worst chance. The New York Islanders finish at 15th. They get the 15th pick. Tampa Bay gets the 14th pick. That's exactly where they were supposed to be. And then all hell broke loose. The Philadelphia Flyers were team 13. They end up winning, not the whole lottery, but they end up winning and end up in the top three. Now, they're the 13th team, so they had only like a 3% chance at the top overall pick. They end up with pick number two. Dallas moves up from, I believe it was 7 or 8. They move up to the third slot. And the New Jersey Devils, who were supposed to have the 5th overall pick, or they were ranked 5th, they end up with the number one pick. And this was, basically for a draft lottery that most people don't even watch anymore because it pretty much ends up the same way every year. It was completely crazy. So the top three teams that have picks, the Devils have pick number one. The pick number two goes to the Flyers. Pick number three goes to the Dallas Stars, and that's it. It's a crazy. It was a crazy way to end it. So the Devils end up with the first overall pick. But we are now going to go. We have Dennis Wyzak on the line. He is the AP writer for the New York Jets. Covers them on a daily basis, and we're going to talk about the Jets. About the Jets draft here with Dennis. Hey, Dennis, are you on the line?
Yes.
Dennis, how you doing, buddy?
Good, not too bad. How about you?
Oh, not too bad, man. Were you actually at the draft?
I was at the Jets facility for all 3 days.
Oh, that's
waiting
cool.
Waiting for each trade back.
Let me tell you something, man. That's not a bad place to be. Forum Park is a pretty good place to spend the weekend.
It is. It's nice, but we were in the bunker waiting for the next move. So, it's like, okay, they have 9 more picks. No. Now they have 7. Now they have 9. It was interesting. It was an interesting, 3 days and how Mike Maccagnan and the crew, handled this draft.
Yeah, it definitely is. I want to cover all that. Let's start at the top. Let's talk about Jamal Adams. Pretty much a surprise that he fell out of the top 5 into the Jets' laps at 6. So a desperate need for this team in the safety position. Talk a little bit about Jamal Adams and what he is going to end up bringing to the New York Jets.
I mean, it's amazing that for the second time in 3 years, arguably, one of the best talents in the entire draft fell to the Jets. It happened 2 years ago with Leonard Williams where people thought he was the number one guy in the draft in terms of overall talent, and he falls to the Jets at 6. And then 2 years later, other than Myles Garrett, a lot of people thought Jamal Adams was right up there
right, in
terms of an impact player, a safety, a hard-hitting guy, a leader, a guy who could really come into a franchise and be a playmaker and a guy who could, assume a leadership role. And we all know that the Jets need that type of guy. So for them to get him at that spot. I mean, that was, you know, they were surprised. He was surprised, you know, and I think anybody, you know, any fan was surprised. Once the Bears, you know, made that trade with the 49ers and then, you know, took Trubisky, that's where the dominoes started to fall.
Right.
And Adams ended up with the Jets. And I think he's a guy who will step in and be a starter immediately. He's a guy who is going to make plays. And if you're a Jet fan, you got to be excited for this type of player with the type of experience and the history that he has of making plays. I mean, this is the guy that you had to be like, whoa, if he's available, he's our guy.
Right.
So, I think it was an excellent pick. There's some luck involved, and, you know, who knows? I mean, it's such a crapshoot the entire draft, but this was one of the guys you thought going in, oh, this guy's a sure thing, and the Jets got him.
And it seemed to me, at least from Maccagnan and Bowles, that they had no idea, they had no thought that this guy would actually get to them at six.
No, in fact, I think ESPN had reported a week or two before the draft that when the Jets had Jamal Adams in, that that they told him, you know, I don't even know why you're here. You know, you're never going to last to get to us. And when we asked Mike Maccagnan and Todd Bowles, they were like, oh no, that wasn't us. So they kind of laughed off that story, but mm-hmm. It's true. I mean, nobody would have thought that guy would have lasted to six. And it's so funny because, you know, you think of six, it's like, whoa, that's pretty high. Well, for him, he thought he was going second or third. So
right.
All of a sudden, he goes number four, number five, and then number six comes, and then he finally gets drafted there. I think that's a home run right off the bat. So you start the draft, if you're the Jets, with a big positive. You go to bed, you know, Thursday night thinking, okay, you know, we got lucky and we hit on our first pick.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, you know, when you get the number that's probably the second best player in the entire draft at six, I mean, I think that, you know, you'd have to call the whole draft, no matter what you do at that point, pretty much a winner at that,
sure.
bringing a guy like Jamal Adams home. What do you think? I mean, I know we talked about this a little bit the other day, but where do you think they would have gone had Adams not been available?
There were so many different ways. I mean, do you take O.J. Howard at that spot? Do you take him at six? I think he's a guy that would have helped immediately also, but mm-hmm. do you take him at six? You know, do you roll with one of the quarterbacks at that point and just kind of, you know, blow things up from there? I don't know. I just, you know, do you take Marshon Lattimore at that point? There were so many needs, and they just still have plenty of needs, but
right.
I think when you are a team that needs so many players at so many different positions,
right.
You just roll into the draft and you can really play that game.
And just take the best player available, right?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, it sounds like a cliche, but in this case, yeah, definitely. And I think that happened in the second round, too, when
good.
They took Marcus May.
Perfect segue, pal. That's exactly
there
where I was going.
Go.
Were you surprised that they went safety times, too? I mean, did you expect that? I mean, listen, this is the Jets. Nobody expects anything. So, is it a little bit crazy that they not only did they take Adams, but then they go and they take Marcus May?
Yeah, no doubt about it. I think, everybody's thinking at that point, okay, well, maybe they go tight end here. Maybe they go running back. You know, maybe because I put out a little Twitter poll going into the second round, and instead of these guys, who would you want?
Yeah, Dalvin Cook was the guy, right?
Right, Dalvin Cook and Kevin King, and I had who else I had on there, Cunningham from Vanderbilt.
Yep.
You know, so there were some guys out there, and you just thought Cam Robinson was the other one. Now, King and Robinson went.
Yeah, they didn't get to them.
Right.
Right.
So then, you know, with those two guys gone and Dalvin Cook sitting there, you're like, okay, well, maybe he's a guy that could help. But then when they said the safety Marcus May, you know, it became a little bit of a draft day punchline that the Jets are just going to draft
all safeties.
But yeah, I mean, they said after the draft, and if you believe what they tell you, that, you know, hey, there were guys that were close to him in terms of their, draft list, but he was the best player that they thought at that position. And
right.
Let's face it, you know, they struggled there. They struggled there in the secondary,
mm-hmm.
you know, so yeah, now you have two guys that could be real foundation pieces of your defensive mm-hmm. backfield. I mean, you know, Calvin Pryor, they probably won't pick up his fifth year option.
Right.
I think he may still be on this team going into the season.
Doesn't make a lot of sense to cut him with his cap hit, right?
Right, exactly. So, you know, you find a way to play him and the other guy. You know, Marcus May is, you know, is also coming off of a little bit of an injury. So, you don't know. And if you have some guy, I mean, he's, Pryor was a first-round draft pick just a few years ago. So I don't think you need to cut bait at this point.
Right.
Marcus Gilchrist, on the other hand, he's coming off of a serious injury, and we may not see him again. And you know, now that you have these two young safeties, that might, you know, that might play into that decision where if, as they get closer to training camp, maybe they cut ties with Gilchrist. But, you know, Todd Bowles loves Gilchrist. You know, he was really the quarterback in that defensive secondary. So, you know, it's, you know, we'll see what happens there. But yeah, I mean, if Marcus May is the best guy on your chart at that point, you take the second safety, and now you know, okay, we shouldn't have to worry about safety for several years after.
That would be the hope and prayer after after these two picks, that's for sure. I too was, you know, Dalvin Cook being as good as he is, but it seemed to me after the disaster that was the Jets locker room last year, and you can attest because you're in that room and you know what it was like. You know, I think that after the disaster from last year, they did not want to draft anybody with any type of discipline. Disciplinary issues, and that's pretty much apparent by them leaving Cook on the table and taking. I mean, each guy that they took, high character guys on each on each and every pick. So it seemed that they were going to make that a priority for you know, for this draft.
Yeah, I think that's totally right. I think that really did play a factor into their draft board. You know, guys who had high character and leadership qualities probably did get bumped higher than other guys who may have had, you know, the similar on-field talent, but that's the type of thing. They're trying to change the culture in the locker room. They're trying to change the culture on the field as well. And, you know, they want to get these guys. When you read about some of these guys that they took, you know, Adams and May and Stewart and, you know, guys like that, Donahue, the guy they took in the fifth round, those are people that you hear leadership. You hear that buzzword leadership, and those are guys that you want to build from, you know,
right.
Bring these guys in and build off of those guys and their talents.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So now after the double safeties, the Jets decided they were going to go and address some of their offensive needs. So what they did, they take Darius Stewart in third, Chad Hansen, two wide receivers back to back in the third and fourth rounds, and then finally getting their tight end in the fifth round. Are you a little surprised? I was a little surprised. I guess after hearing about Devin Smith and the and another torn ACL, I guess I wasn't as surprised. But are you surprised they went back to back with wide receivers in the third and the fourth?
Yeah, I was, and I think, as you said, the news about Devin Smith is that he's out for the year with another torn ACL. It's the same knee, and now his career really you could say is you know, in doubt at this point. I mean, that's a guy who. His game is speed, and now he's coming off of a second, you know, straight torn ACL.
Right.
So then you see in the third and fourth rounds, they take a wide receiver, and they take, you know, Stewart is a 5'11 guy, but he's strong.
Physical receiver at 5'11.
Yeah, exactly. And a guy who's got some versatility. He can run. He even threw a pass in the championship game.
I saw that.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the type of guy, you know, he's a talent, you know. So, okay, he can help in the return game. So, and then you bring in a guy like Hansen, who led the Pac-12 in catches with 92. I mean, here's a guy who's got he has some hands, you know.
Right.
So, and a potential replacement for Eric Deckard down the line. And I don't think that'll be this year, but, you know, they're looking toward the future. And this is a guy in the fourth round, you expect him to have some impact.
Right. No, absolutely.
And then Leggett, like you said, I mean, you get him in the fifth round. I had completely forgotten about him because so many of the other, you know, big names, so to speak, tight ends had gone earlier, you know, than the fifth round. But, you know, he's a guy that if any of these guys that the Jets of the nine players, he was the one guy they said, well, you know, there were some reports that he was a little bit lazy at times, and he tried to rededicate his focus, you know, to the game.
He admitted that too, didn't he? Didn't he actually admit that he had been a little lazy that one season?
Yeah,
I mean,
that's
got to be a pretty high character thing to admit you're being lazy.
No doubt. Yeah, I mean, once you talk to the guy, I mean, you know, he knows this is it. Like, you know, this team is going to count on him, and I'll tell you what, he could end up starting this year. And I think the first two guys, Adams and May, they could end up starting week one, and Leggett could be the tight end week one as well, because, you know, as we know, they don't have a lot of depth as far as the tight end. Safarian Jenkins
right.
is suspended for the first 2 weeks, so Leggett really Amazing. Has a chance to kind of get off to you know, a really good start as a pro here.
Unless I want to go with who's it? Is it Bostic still around? Or is it Bowman?
No, they have Braden Bowman. They have Brian Parker. They've got Jason Vanderlaan. You know, some guys that
a cast of a thousand for the tight end position. All right. Well, I guess let's address the elephant in the room. And are you surprised they did not take a quarterback?
I am, and because McCagnan has said, we'll probably take a quarterback every year. Well, he didn't this year. And I think it was a good move. I think at that point, once you get to the fifth round, I mean, that's really a camp arm at that point. I think they'll have a camp arm when all the dust clears and you know who, the undrafted free agents are. Because really, the three guys that are going to go into camp with a legit shot are McCown, obviously, Petty, and Hackenberg.
Right.
So if you get into the sixth round and you're drafting a quarterback, I mean, that's, they tried to get other needs. And by taking Donahue, the linebacker from West Georgia, you get somebody who's probably going to be a core special teamer.
Right.
You take Elijah McGuire, the running back from Louisiana Lafayette, that's a guy who could be a third down guy,
mm-hmm.
and somebody out of the backfield who can catch some balls and make some plays. And then the one thing I thought, okay, that was good, they didn't take the quarterback as the draft got later in the rounds, but they waited too long to take cornerbacks. And mm-hmm. I think the last two guys, Jeremy Clark from Michigan and Derek Jones from Mississippi, those guys have a chance to help, but I think when you're looking at 2 sixth-round picks, you're not looking at guys who are going to make immediate impacts. I think those guys are going to have to kind of start from the bottom up and play some special teams and that sort of thing. So I think the Jets still have some issues in the secondary, cornerback, not safety now that they have the two first and second rounders. Mm-hmm. But I think that's where I was more surprised that they didn't take a cornerback earlier.
That was my next question, was with this being as talent rich for defensive backs of a draft, seems like every pick for the first 3 or 4 rounds, it seemed like, after all the quarterbacks went in the first 12, right. It seemed like from there on out, everyone was taking a cornerback, and the Jets didn't take anybody until the sixth round. And I have to say, personally, I was extremely surprised at that.
Yeah. And like I said, that's the thing. And I think they said that the Devin Smith injury didn't really play a role in how they drafted.
It had to.
Yeah. Yeah. When you're taking two wide receivers back-to-back third and fourth round, I think you're thinking that, okay, we're not going to have one of our guys who we were probably going to count on, to some extent as being a speedster, a guy who could try to, make some plays down the field. He's out for the year, and Jalen Marshall is suspended for 4 games. So that's two wide receivers, young wide receivers, who you're not going to have to
right.
start the season.
Mm-hmm.
So now they have two other guys who can pair with Decker and Anunua, Robbie Anderson and Sean Peak, and compete for some of those spots. And I would assume that both Stewart and Hansen will make this team pretty easily. I mean, third and fourth rounders, they're not going to do anything with those guys. So that's your base wide receiver group.
Right.
And at this point at cornerback, you still have a lot of questions. Is it, Marcus Williams and Buster Screen? The guy who they just signed, who was Maurice Claiborne, is
right.
he healthy?
Another injury-prone guy.
Yeah, so there's still questions there.
Absolutely. I'd like to say my personal disappointment that the Jets did not take Jake Butt. I just think that that would have been such a great marketing thing for the Jets. I'm very disappointed that this guy is not part of the organization. And
think of the headlines.
Oh, forget it. It was just would have been perfect, especially with the butt fumble thing. I think that having him around would have just been fantastic. And I think they would have sold a million jerseys over the weekend.
Yeah.
That would have been that would have been great. But just to wrap up, I really appreciate your time tonight. I know you've had a long and busy weekend, but Mel Kiper on ESPN gave the Jets a B+ for the draft. What are your overall thoughts? And you know, if you could give them a grade, what would you do? What would you give them?
Yeah, I probably would echo that. I think because the draft is such a crapshoot, you just don't know. But I think they were smart. I don't think they really reached too much. I think if you think of any of these guys, you look at the list. Maybe Donahue because he was a Division II guy, but. Mm-hmm. He had 13.5 sacks, and it depends on what they use him for. If they just try to make him an outside, linebacker, a guy who's just going to rush the passer, you team him up with Malden and, some of the other guys they have. But otherwise, I think they just really, they were realistic. They looked at the team and they have needs everywhere. So it's like, all right, let's get 9 guys who could potentially help build a foundation and get us to where we're at least competitive, and no matter where that is, and it's 2 safeties, 2 wide receivers, 2 cornerbacks, a tight end, a linebacker. So really, I think that was the signal here that, we're just going to take, the guys that we think fit into this plan and we'll go from there. So, I think they drafted smart. I think that's, and as you know, that isn't always the case with this franchise.
Yes,
so I think
that's for certain.
I think they did well.
Now, I agree with you. I got last one for you. Sheldon Richardson, is he on the team opening night or is he out?
I think he's here. He's probably going to remain on the trading block, but I'm just not sure what you can get for him at this point.
Right.
Now, if you could find a team that's willing to throw in a draft pick and maybe a starting caliber cornerback, then maybe, but at this point where teams are really starting to set their rosters up and all that, I don't know that the Jets would get the best value for him at this point. So
right.
I think he stays.
A little late in the game to try and move him off off the roster.
Exactly.
I agree, and it's too bad that probably the other than Richard Sherman, which I'm not completely convinced he's on the block, but it's
sure.
The other guy who's the other main guy who's on the block is Malcolm Butler, and New England is not trading Malcolm Butler to the Jets. So
can you imagine watching 2 Sundays or whenever two games a year with Sheldon Richardson rushing the Jets quarterback?
Oh, forget it.
Can you imagine?
No. Yeah, I can imagine. I can definitely imagine. Dennis, this is the Jets. You
right.
absolutely
right.
know I can
follow.
Picture it.
Right.
You know this better than most. Oh,
right.
Man.
I mean, hey, you guys saw Darrell Revis, for a year and go win a Super Bowl with him. So, I mean, I guess anything's possible.
And then fall apart when he comes back. The great return, the prodigal son comes back, and all of a sudden he's a shell of the guy he was before.
Yeah, it's too bad.
Yes, absolutely. Dennis, I cannot thank you enough. Like I said, I know this was a rough – I know it was a busy weekend, a rough weekend. Just tell everybody where they can find you on social media and where they can follow you.
I'm on Twitter at DWAZ73, and I'm on there. I'm on Instagram, and I've got a page on Facebook that's linked from my Twitter page, so you can find all my stuff through there.
Dennis, thanks again, man. I really appreciate it. I'll talk to you down the line, brother.
Sounds great. Anytime, man.
Thank you, bro. Thanks.
Okay, you got it.
Dennis Wozniak, everybody, the Jets beat writer for the Associated Press. You could see real engaging guy, knows his stuff up and down. Covered the entire draft weekend this weekend. I have to agree with him. I think the Jets had a pretty good weekend. We had the same thoughts on a lot of the different picks, and I definitely think that this is a good step forward for the Jets. I think that not taking the quarterback was the right thing. Give Hackenberg his year. It wasn't a great year for quarterbacks anyway. And then, listen, they're going to be a bottom 5 team this year anyway. So you get a good draft pick next year, and then maybe you invest that first round pick into a quarterback. So we're at 8:30, so we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to have Randy Marshall of Newsday. We're going to talk New York Islanders, possible another arena. Stick with us, everybody. We'll be right back.
listening to Sports Talk 1240 on Long Island's AM 1240. WGBB.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Want to advertise your business on Sports Talk 1240? Place an ad on sportstalk1240.com and run a radio commercial during the show every Sunday night here on AM 1240 WGBB. Our rates are very affordable. We'll even produce the radio commercial for you. Just head over to sportstalk1240.com and fill out the Contact Us form and let us start promoting your business today.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gust Buster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit GustBuster.com and get your Gust Buster today.
Stay connected to Sports Talk 1240 by following us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Sports Talk 1240.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now back to the show.
Welcome back, Sports Talk 1240. Tony Stabile with you live from the WGBB studios. Brian Graves on the other side of the glass. We're going to bring on Miss Randy Marshall. She is from Newsday. She is on the editorial board. She is also the resident Long Island arena guru. So let's talk to Randy here and find out what's going on. Randy, how are you?
I'm great, thank you. How are you?
Oh, I am just peachy. Thank you so much for asking. I since high school now, and I'm in my 40s. So now since high school, I've been talking about an arena. A new arena for the New York Islanders, and here we are. We're still talking about it in 2017, so that's that.
Pretty incredible.
Oh, it's amazing. It really is. So the announcement this week from Commissioner Gary Bettman in an interview with the Associated Press that the New York Islander owners, Jonathan Ledecky and Scott Malkin, are going to be involved in the RFP process for the Belmont RFP, which is the parcel of land that is next to Belmont Racetrack. So exactly, in English, what does that mean?
Okay, I can do English. So an RFP is a request for proposals. That's the first thing you need to know. Mm-hmm. The second thing you need to know that's really important is that the Belmont Racetrack and the surrounding land is owned by the state of New York. So it is state-controlled land. The state gets to decide what to do with it. But it also means that no developer can just come on in and say, I want to build something there,
right,
and build it.
Mm-hmm.
So what needs to happen is the state needs to issue a request for proposals, which is exactly what it says. It's going to be, you know, a multi-page document that will provide standards, ideas, sort of parameters for what they'd like to see there. And then developers can have at it, and they usually have a couple of months, a few months, to respond. You get all the responses in, and hopefully the state makes a decision. Now, we've been down this road with Belmont before.
Yes,
and
the last four or 5 years.
We spent four years waiting for a decision.
Right.
We had three bidders, and we spent 4 years waiting for the state to make a decision. They never made a decision. They canceled the RFP and pulled the proposal altogether.
Well, it also coincided with the Cosmos going
bankrupt,
too.
That's exactly right,
okay.
Yes. Yeah, it coincided with the Cosmos going, having financial difficulties. It coincided also, however, with the Islanders saying that they were unhappy in Brooklyn, and
yes,
some people think there's actually a connection there as well.
I'm one of those people, by the
yes
way.
Yes, so
okay,
there are plenty of people who think that the state was paying attention, and folks were saying to the state, you know what, pull this one.
Right.
Let's wait and figure this thing out.
Mm-hmm.
So what the commissioner said this week is not really news to those of us who have been listening.
Worst kept secret in New York?
I'm sorry?
The worst kept secret in New York?
It was the
much
worst kept secret in New York. It's still the worst kept secret in New York because obviously nothing's happened yet.
Right.
But yeah, the idea is that the Islanders would, or the Islanders owners rather, would be among a development group to to apply to the request for proposals. Now, keep in mind, there is no request for proposals yet.
Yes.
It is due out sometime soon. Officially, it's due out. The state says that they're working on it.
Mm-hmm.
Unofficially, I'm told it could be any day or within the next couple of weeks.
Okay. Okay. So that's a
good. So it's coming soon.
That's a good thing, I guess.
It is
right?
a good thing.
Okay.
It is a good thing. Yeah.
So
because the sooner we have an idea of what's really going on here, the less we have to talk rumors, right?
Exactly. So, exactly.
Which so, we do a lot of around here.
And then
the question becomes
right.
What will the Islanders propose,
right?
Mm-hmm. A, who will work with them, because mm-hmm. I don't think it will just be Malkin and Ledecky. There's talk that Dolan and his group is interested.
Yes.
There's talk that Wilpon is interested, mm-hmm. and there could be others as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then the question is, they're not just going to build an arena. So the question
right.
becomes, what else will the Islanders owners and their partners want to build there?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's
the key to the whole thing.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
because the community isn't going to be enamored by an arena by itself.
Right.
But if there's open space, a hotel, some other retail maybe, other development that makes sense for that area, community center, particularly anything that would really help the community,
because
mm-hmm. that's a community that needs development and needs economic boost.
Right.
That would work.
Mm-hmm.
And so the question is really going to be, what happens on the rest of that space? What's their plan? And we go from there. But we won't know anything until that RFP actually comes out and until the bidders make themselves known.
Right. Okay. And now just to clarify, because I want to mm-hmm. get back to this community thing.
Please.
Just to clarify something you said, because I think this is the most important thing that when it comes to this, and especially when it comes to the NHL, which has basically said that, they wanted nothing to do with Nassau County. Nassau County has really nothing to do with this at all. This is all the state, correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
And ultimately, the other thing to remember here is that the Islanders are not the decision makers, right?
Right.
The state is.
Right.
So ultimately, the Islanders apply.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone else can apply, and then the state makes a decision. Now, the word is that if the state suggests in its RFP, and if the state gets specific, let's say the state puts out a request for proposals that specifically says we want a sports and entertainment destination.
Right.
That's an interesting little nugget, right? Because
mm-hmm.
it limits what they're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
If they keep a very general, we want development. Then anyone can apply.
Exactly.
So the wording of the request for proposals will be an interesting little thing, too. But, yes, you're correct. Nassau County and, perhaps more importantly, the town of Hempstead
have nothing to do with this.
Has no decision-making authority whatsoever. Now, they can yell and scream,
mm-hmm.
and there are people within Nassau County who, have the governor's ear. But the governor will make the decision the governor wants to make, and Empire State Development, which is the agency in the state of New York that handles this stuff, will make the decision it wants to make, no matter what Nassau County or the town of Hempstead thinks.
Well, I can tell you that is music to the ears of Islanders fans that have been completely screwed, pardon the term, by the county since the stories are true, they started talking about telling the county about replacing or upgrading the building back in the late 80s. So,
mm-hmm.
so really, for the last, 30 years or so,
mm-hmm.
this has been going on. But
yeah.
So now...
There were plans to do this under Nassau County Executive, former Nassau County Executive Tom Galata, and that was quite a long time ago.
Exactly. All right, so now...
Yeah, so this is, and again, this is obviously to clarify, this is Belmont we're talking about now, not the Hub.
No, the Hub is dead.
This is not about the Coliseum.
Hub is dead, hon. That's for sure. I'm completely done with the Hub at this point. I'm done with that. That's completely over with. But I don't disagree
with you in terms of the Islanders.
Yes, we've had that conversation together at a few different points. But now you talked about a little bit about the community, and obviously, listen, when anything like this comes up, there's always going to be rhetoric. There's always going to be posturing in the press, and immediately an announcement was made by I don't remember the group, but basically about the people of the community were worried about parking
traffic.
And traffic, and which is a tired adage that we heard way too much of when they were talking about the Hub. So basically, you said before that the community wants not just an arena, but more there. What is the community actually looking for? Like, what is going to make them happy? And are we going to be talking about traffic for the next 18 months? I mean, that's really the big thing.
Traffic will absolutely be a word that we're using for the next 18 months. Anything having to do with Long Island development involves traffic. So, you know, no matter who's doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Look, I'm going to be very specific here. I think Islander fans have to understand that the community input here is actually very important.
I agree.
And they should not discount it that quickly.
Right.
Including traffic concerns. So mm-hmm. I would start with, I understand that we hear it too much, but traffic is a legitimate concern on Long Island, and it is absolutely something that whoever applies for this RFP will have to show and demonstrate that they can deal with.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So, number one. Number two, the state, as an entity that handles this process, is not just the governor and the Empire State Development, but also the state assemblymen and state senators that are involved in this area.
Right.
And they are elected officials,
mm-hmm.
and they are
going to listen to their
community.
People, their constituents. They're
right.
Definitely going to do that.
And so they are not going to support a project that their constituencies as a whole are completely against. Now, no one has come out against the idea of an Islanders arena completely.
Right, like they did at the Hub.
Right. So that's a positive.
Mm-hmm.
The feedback I'm getting from folks is more open-minded than what I heard at the Hub when Lighthouse and the like was first developed,
I
and I think that that's a good thing.
I think that I was actually drawn to the fact that representatives from both sides of the aisle were at least willing to listen and sounded positive, you know, up to the idea. Of course, going back to what it's going to be, what the community and how they feel about it.
Right. So in terms of what the community wants, they don't want a soccer stadium. We know that.
Yes.
They want to make sure that their voices in terms of traffic and parking and the like are dealt with.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is very doable with an Islanders arena there.
I
think you can deal with the traffic concerns. Look, you and I probably both traversed the Cross Island Parkway. It's not the easiest roadway in the world to deal with.
One too many times, but yes.
Yeah, but I do think with the right roadway construction or mitigation, I think that that's doable. But they also, look, we're talking about communities like Elmont and Floral Park and communities right on that Nassau-Queens border
right. That
need an economic boost. They need, first and foremost, jobs.
Yep.
And we want to see, I'm sure they want to see, you know, a host of good-paying jobs or various pieces of the puzzle that can then produce jobs.
Right.
So it may be, for instance, and the Islanders Arena by itself doesn't really do that. Okay,
mm-hmm.
It's a lot of part-time jobs. It's okay, but that's not a huge job boost.
Right.
It's certainly something that you know, we should take into consideration, but there's got to be more.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a tourism type situation would bode very well there, a
mm-hmm.
hotel, some other entertainment kind of, you know, items that could be interesting, things that will draw people into the neighborhood to spend money there.
Exactly.
Because that begets more money, which begets economic activity.
Of course.
A community center or some gathering place, which that community desperately needs and lacks, would be an interesting piece of the puzzle and isn't hard to do when you're thinking about, you know, the pieces of the puzzle. But the other factor to keep in mind
mm-hmm.
is that whoever's building that arena will need revenue-making items to go around it.
Absolutely.
The hotel is definitely one. Mm-hmm. Retail would be another. Restaurants, yep. That kind of thing.
Put a big bowling alley, that'd be good.
I'm sorry?
Put a big bowling alley, that'll be good.
You could. There's been some residents really want a supermarket. There really isn't one in that entire area.
You know what? I did not know that. That's
yeah.
interesting.
In fact, one of the developers the first time around proposed a Costco.
I was going to say, put a Stop and Shop, make
yeah,
it a Stop and Shop
and again,
arena.
I don't know
that'd
Costco's
be
the answer
great.
Either in terms of jobs and economic development. I would like to see more of, you know, again, a destination.
Yes.
Belmont has a lot of potential. It's a lot of land. It's an interesting location in terms of, you know, the Nassau-Queens border. I'd like to see something more special there.
Right.
I
think that they would,
Costco.
Too. I would think that the state
yeah.
would want to do that as well.
I think so, too. The other thing to keep in mind, which is just a side point but is important, is that this isn't just about the Islanders and it's not even just about Belmont.
Mm-hmm.
Anything we do at Belmont will impact development at Aqueduct. in Queens.
Yes.
There's a lot of talk, and a lot of the goal is to make Belmont a full-year, full-time racetrack.
That was my next
question. Move all of the horse racing over from Aqueduct over to Belmont.
Right.
Makes a lot of sense, to me at least.
I would agree with that.
And Aqueduct likes that idea because that frees up space there for more development.
Right.
So there are dominoes here that, you know, again, I come at this not, I'm not a sports writer, right? I come at this, I do economics and I do development. This could be a very significant win in terms of economic development in both the city and on Long Island.
Yes.
If it's done right.
Of course.
And that's, I think, what everybody's looking for.
Well, I agree. Absolutely. And, you know, the other part of it is that I wanted to ask you about is, there is a Long Island Railroad Station there. It's
yes.
only used, I believe, in the summertime when...
It's only used on the days there are races.
Okay.
It's even more specific than that. It is only used when there are events at Belmont.
Which is similar to what it is at Metz Willet Point, right? Is only when there's events there that they actually make
no,
that
No, the Long Island Railroad, well, it stops there, you know, not only on Met Game days, on other days too. But yes, it is similar in that it's not a regular stop for... but certainly, obviously, the railroad has the 7 train. I mean, the Willets Point has the 7 train, so it's a little bit of a different situation.
Right. But and now you would have to think that they would probably look to make that you know, at least a usable station year round. Correct.
Agreed. Yes, that absolutely is going to have to be part of it. And if anything, I think that that's one of the goals.
Right.
Right. You want it to be a more accessible area. You want people to want to come there and to come there. And so certainly. Public transportation is a huge part of this.
Yep.
One of the reasons why Nassau Hub is not likely the answer for the Islanders is because of the lack of public transit. And Belmont can provide that. And if it's done well, you need to figure out the details. It's going, but you know, again, that's not something that's going to happen until the other pieces sort of fall into place. Some people have said, well, the MTA hasn't said anything about making the Long Island Railroad full year round there. We're not going to say anything until there's actually a plan.
Right.
Right. So don't let a lack of information cloud this.
Right.
I believe that it's very, very possible, and the state will certainly make that a part of the process, that the Long Island Railroad could be a full year, full-time station there.
Along with other, obviously, infrastructure things.
Right.
You know, I think, and I heard they mentioned the other day about making the parking lots more accessible from the parkways and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
So I'm
Again,
sure that's all part of it, right?
Not very difficult. And there's plenty of parking there. So
yes.
Parking to me, even beyond, I mean, the development space, right? There's plenty of parking there. And so parking is less of an issue than it was at the hub.
Right.
From what I can tell, at least, there's parking is a pretty I'm not worried about parking. There will be plenty of parking there for both Islander games, for Belmont races, for whatever else is going on there.
Right.
So I feel pretty confident that that is not an issue at Belmont.
So now, I guess this leads to the next question is, what would this mean for the new Coliseum, which, as you and I both know, is really the old Coliseum with new floors.
Paint.
And paint, sorry, I forgot. I always forget about the paint. And apparently they put some new urinals in, so, I mean, that's always a positive thing.
Now.
Yeah, well, as far as I understand that they're new. So so tell me, so what would this mean for the Coliseum that does not have an anchor tenant other than the Long Island Nets? So what would this mean, a new building for the Coliseum?
So we as an editorial board wrote an editorial about a couple of weeks ago that suggested, and I stand by this, that there is a future scenario that could include both an arena at Belmont and the Coliseum.
Mm-hmm.
If the folks in Nassau County think outside the box, be creative, and use that building well.
You're asking
right?
a lot there, Randy. You're asking a lot.
I'm trying. I still believe. so here, I think that it depends on the use, right? If that's an arena that focuses on other things, boxing, college sports to whatever extent it can, although it was just denied as one of the NCAA basketball sites for 2019. Concerts here and there, smaller shows, and conventions and conferences.
That
I think
makes a
that
lot of sense.
Makes a lot more sense
yes.
for that building.
Mm-hmm.
You do not want to cram people into very busy concerts. The Billy Joel concert was a very good example.
Mm-hmm.
And as I have said, I don't know how many times, the concourse size has not changed. And so anyone who was in that building for an Islanders game during playoffs or an Islanders-Rangers game or a Billy Joel concert knows what those concourses are like,
right.
And they have not changed. And they will not change because it is too expensive to change them.
Exactly.
So given that, I think it's better for that arena to focus on smaller events.
Right.
Give us more events and make them smaller instead of fewer events that are...
Which is basically what they did to it now. I mean, it's downsized, it's smaller.
I agree.
It's not a Major League building anymore.
No, it's not. And that's
barely
why,
a Major League building
why
when
I've
there,
been
but...
a proponent of the idea that I do not think that's a place where the Islanders should go. I do not think it's a Major League building. I do not think it's the right building for the Islanders. But I do think there are things that they can do. I think conventions and conferences, and, you know, shows, I don't know, the boat show and this show and cons and that kind of stuff
could be a
good use for that building.
Mm-hmm.
Conventions of the Comic-Con variety on a smaller scale,
sure. I don't
sure,
think Comic-Con
right?
would fit in there, to be honest with you.
Huh?
I don't think Comic-Con
no,
would
No, I'm saying of a smaller variety.
Oh, I understand.
Like a little limited. You know, there's Geek-Con and this con and whatever.
We'll have a Star Wars or a Star Trek convention.
I've got a 13-year-old who's into such things.
Oh.
But, you know, I think that kind of thing could be a use for that building. I do not think that building is necessarily going to close just because of the arena, an arena at Belmont. However, I am one of the people who thought that even by itself, I wasn't sure if this arena was going to last without an anchor tenant.
We had this conversation,
so
too.
It's fully dependent on what the managers of that building and the people who own it and the people who lease it do with it.
The Barclays people.
Yes. And the Barclays people and Affagowny.
Right.
And so, I think the right people could definitely make this work. I don't think it's necessarily Barclays Part 2 that's the answer here.
No, definitely not.
I think you need to think differently a little bit about this building. Now, the other factor is that it could just turn out to be Barclays versus Madison Square Garden, 2-2, right? Whatever goes into Madison Square Garden comes over to Belmont, and whatever goes into Barclays comes over to the Coliseum, and
right.
it basically becomes somewhat of a battle between those two parties. That's not necessarily a bad thing.
No, definitely not.
I don't know for sure that a Coliseum, you know, will be financially successful if there is an arena at Belmont. It raises a serious question. It's certainly something you have to deal with. But I will repeat something that we said in the editorial and that I've said before. That should not stop the state from making the best decision for Belmont.
I agree with you. I agree. And I think the state feels
so
the same way.
That's where I disagree with some others who have come out saying, oh, no, we don't want the arena at Belmont because of NASA, because of the hub. I don't like that connection.
Oh, that's short-sightedness, but that's typical Nassau County. That's what they do.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how they got into this mess.
It has been at times. So that's where I come at it from. I want to see development at the hub. The hub is a really important site for Nassau County.
Yes, it is.
But I'm not going to let development at the hub or the redo of the Coliseum get in the way of good development at Belmont.
Agreed.
And they're two different sites. And if the state can move forward with Belmont while Nassau County is having trouble at the hub, let the state move forward at Belmont while Nassau County has trouble at the hub.
And honestly, I mean, they could develop the hub based upon what they put at Belmont, which would be better for both sites.
Maybe, yeah, maybe. I mean, the problem with the hub right now is that there's very little definitive there. Feinstein just pulled out,
right.
Doing a Center for Electronic Medicine, which was going to basically be the anchor tenant at the hub.
Right.
That was a pretty big blow. Depending on who you talk to, depends on how big of a blow it is.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see another tenant coming in there that has been announced or defined or even suggested.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they have to sort of, it's almost starting over at the hub a bit, even though you have a renovated Coliseum.
Right, right.
Except for Sloan, which is building an outpatient center there, which is lovely
and
important. There's no comprehensive development plan for the hub, and there needs to be.
Mm-hmm.
They can't be thinking about this piecemeal, which is what I fear is happening.
Which is, again, what they've been doing for the last 25 years. So,
yeah.
I mean,
it needs to be more comprehensive. They need to think about it comprehensively. They can't have Bruce Ratner saying, oh, we're going to build housing at the hub without a reason for it and without an understanding of what else is going to go there.
Willie gets a load of the town when it comes to that. That's
Well, so the town is approved, and we're getting off track, but the town has approved a zone for the hub that allows 500 units of housing. So that's not a lot, and that's nowhere near what Charles Wong wanted to build with Lighthouse.
Oh, that's for sure.
But if somebody were to come in with a development plan that included fewer than 500 units, they could get it through the town.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's but, that would, you know, be best
again,
case scenario, I
my
think.
My biggest thing here is that I don't want anything going on over there to affect whether or not there's development at Belmont and whether or not the Islanders are the right answer there. If the Islanders end up at Belmont, it should be because they should be at Belmont and that it's the right place for an arena and other economic development at Belmont. And I do think, and I've said this, you know, I've said this to you before,
yes,
that Belmont is the best and most likely option right now.
Right.
And I think and it I more than I thought it when we last talked.
Yeah. No, and I agree with you. And I believe that this has definitely been is the right plan. And I think that I Ledecky and Malkin are real estate guys. And I think that they targeted this early on because they saw it as an opportunity. They saw that this area was floundering and that they had an idea. So I believe that that's the reason why we're as far along as we are, because I think that this has kind of it's been coming in stages, ever since from last year.
Yeah. And I do think the state has to be careful here. The state can't be a suggestion along the way here that, or even a reality along the way here that this is in the bag for the Islanders.
Right, right, right.
That opens the state up to all sorts of problems, and it would open the Islanders and everybody else up to all sorts of delays, right?
It would be interesting to see how they word it, though, right?
Right.
Because that would kind of give you a little bit of a preview into what the state is thinking.
Yes, it would, but I think, again, don't put too much stock into that, because if I were the people writing that RFP, I wouldn't make it too specific, because if it does...
It's tipping your hand that they're trying to tailor it towards the Islanders.
The future development at Belmont requires an arena that can provide hockey. And, yeah. I mean, that would be a bad idea. Right?
Yeah, probably.
Because
it's got lawsuit written all over it.
And look, some of these elected officials are right. Mm. Maybe there is a better plan out there for Belmont. Mm. Maybe somebody has brilliance that is completely outside from anything we're talking about, right? You want to leave yourself open to the possibility that there's something that we haven't thought of that's something completely different. But given the fact that we've been down this road before and we didn't get that, oh, my God, brilliance,
right?
I don't think we're getting that brilliance again. I think this is a very interesting, very good possibility for Belmont, having the Islanders there. And I don't know of anything that's more, interesting, creative, or economically appropriate.
If there was, I think we would have heard about it by now.
I think so, too. But again, the state has to leave itself open to that option. So that's the only thing I would put out there. I'm not going to at all suggest the state needs to be careful, A, and B, the state needs to be open to the possibility that there is something else out there. Because, again, the state needs to do what is right for that area and what is right for Belmont. And that may be the Islanders. As of right now, it certainly looks like it could be. But you want to keep yourself open. So I would just caution everybody that if the wording of the RFP is vague or open, don't despair.
Right, exactly.
There's a good reason for that.
Exactly.
Right? There's a good reason to keep your options open here.
Absolutely. So. Randy, I can't thank you enough for your time.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much for going over this with us. And
anytime.
I'm assuming we're going to talk about this more down the ride. So,
you never thought you were going to spend all this time on a sports show talking about development.
Yeah, well, yeah, I kind of did. So, Randy,
yeah, well, we'll keep in touch, and obviously keep your eyes open, and we'll see what comes next. Meanwhile, we didn't even talk about Willett's Point, but don't anybody be thinking the Islanders are going to end up at Willett's Point.
I'm not putting the cart before the horse, so.
No, the everything we've heard that came out of the recent hearing and everything makes it sound to me that the Islanders aren't going to Willett's Point.
I agree with you. Thank you again, Randy, so much.
Take
I appreciate
care.
It. You too. Take
Thank
care.
You.
Thank you.
Bye.
Randy Marshall, Newsday editorial board member, and she is, as I said, the resident Long Island arena guru. As you said, as you can hear, she has a really good grasp on what's going on. She's got all the inside info, and she basically laid it out for you folks. This is, in her opinion, the best path for the New York Islanders. That is my time tonight. Paul Spiteri and Jerry Wolfler are going to take over. They're going to have Steve Summers of WFAN on. Guys, have a great week. Enjoy the show. Thanks for listening in, and talk to you soon. Thanks.
The views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.